You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When Jason Miller's That Championship Season opened on Broadway in 1972, it won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama and the Tony Award for Best Play. It takes place on a single night when four high school basketball teammates reunite with their coach 20 years after they won the state championship. It's being revived in a limited run at the Bernard B. Jacobs Theater on West 45th Street with an all-star cast, and I'm very pleased to welcome two of those stars, Kiefer Sutherland and Brian Cox, to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having
welcome
us.
Welcome back, Brian. Yes, Kiefer, isn't this your Broadway debut?
It is, actually, yeah.
And your New York theater debut?
Yes. As a young Canadian actor, this was a fantasy of mine that has been going on for 20-some-odd years. And to be able to be here and doing this show has just surpassed every kind of fantasy I've ever had.
Well, your mother and father were actors, and they did theater. So have you done theater anywhere?
I have. I have done a lot of theater in Canada. It was a hard deal getting a job in New York.
It was a hard deal getting it, but once you became a major success, I'd imagine that the problem was more that your film and TV careers were kind of consuming, time-consuming.
Well, as of late, yeah. But still, it's a very hard thing. People see you in a certain way and things like that. In all fairness, this play came about by Jason Patrick, whose father is Jason Miller.
In fact, Jason Patrick is Jason Patrick Miller Jr., isn't he?
Yes,
he is. Yeah. Well, in fact, he's not even – Jason Miller isn't even Jason Miller. Jason Miller is Jack Miller. Because Jason Miller stole his son's name.
And not at all. So
your real name is Donald, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Only in my sleep. But Jason actually put this whole thing together, and
he's brilliant in it.
And he's wonderful.
It's almost like he was born to play the role. Well, I understand that his father, who was also an actor, wrote that part for himself, so it's kind of ironic.
Well, it's very funny. Jason has wonderful tidbits of information, and Jason, as the steward of this property, this play, has been so beautiful, kind of in the whole rehearsal process. And correct me if I'm wrong, Brian.
No, absolutely.
I mean, he really hasn't imposed his will about any of it. Although every once in a while, if I got lost, he would say, well, my dad wrote this for this reason, or he said that line for that reason. Yeah. And he would be wonderful about stuff like that.
Well, that actually is almost like having the playwright there. And Brian, you were on Broadway most recently in Tom Stoppard's Rock and Roll, and he shows up for rehearsals.
Yeah,
so he does that sort of thing for his actors.
Yeah, I mean, Tom is very, Tom's great. He doesn't actually say very much unless the director asks him to, and then he will because he's there. And his thing is just learn my lines and say them clearly. That's all he asks. You know, he doesn't ask much more.
Well, both he and Jason Miller wrote witty, crackling dialogue. Do you see any other similarities?
No, I think I think they come from a different sensibility. I think the play is much more visceral, and it's really about, you know, there's no big idea. As John Simon brilliantly said, it's about life itself. It's not a big idea. It's not about a view or a vision or, you know, it's about a bunch of guys sorting their lives out with this one event that's marked their lives and marked their lives for good or for ill. And I think the play's about purity of purpose. That's what I feel the play's about.
Well, you play the coach of a high school basketball team in Pennsylvania. We never even learned his name. They just call him Coach, and perhaps that's because for these men, he served even more as a life coach than as a sports coach.
Yeah, I think he's a man of contradictions, and he's influenced these boys in a way. And he says quite clearly that it wasn't just the basketball; it's the fact that they were brilliant in every. And you know, he talks to James. He says, "You know, this I speak for democracy." He had this, and he remembers that. He remembers them as men, you know, and so, yeah, it's a, it's a, It's an extraordinary play. I think it's a great play. I really do think it's a great American play.
Are you comfortable these days just slipping into different American accents?
Yeah, it's become my way of life.
I have to say, it's quite something to watch.
because
literally, he will be sitting there talking to Jerry, who is our stage door manager, and he'll be talking like that, like, "Hey, Jerry, you had a good day today," and then literally walk on stage.
Yeah.
Boom, like he was from Scranton, Pennsylvania.
And you didn't just do an American accent. You definitely did a Scranton accent.
Yeah.
Did you get a coach to teach
you? No, I have a very weird way of working. It's a processing thing that I do. It's about a tone. It's not even about accent so much as tone and also the way the stuff is constructed. I mean, Jason writes incredibly well. And he writes classically. I mean, the coach is constantly repeating himself. Never forget that, boys. Never, you know. There's these little phrases that are catchphrases of his that he does.
The sort of thing that we'd expect from a coach.
That's right, and therefore
year after year with a whole bunch of different kids every year.
It builds up, and also Jason's own background is a Catholic university, classical, Jesuitical background. And that's very clearly in the play.
Well, you're from Scotland.
I
suspect there wasn't much basketball when you were a kid. But could this coach just as easily have been a soccer coach or a rugby coach?
Oh, he could have been anything. I mean, it's archetypal. And that's why it's a great play, because it's about archetypes. And it tolls a universal bell, you know.
Well, the entire play takes place in the coach's home, which is dominated by two pieces of decor, the championship trophy and a large portrait of Teddy Roosevelt.
Good old Teddy.
Do these two objects tell us most about what we need to know about him, or do we have to also notice that there are photos of Senator Joseph McCarthy and President Kennedy on the mantle?
Yeah. Well, it's the Irish thing, you know. It's very Irophile, the play. I mean, Jason Miller acknowledges his Irish roots. You know, he's the Molly Maguires, the whole Pennsylvania kind of mining community, and though he wasn't part of that, it's very strongly about community. And, you know, the whole thing is an homage to community and the death of community. You know, that's the tragedy of the play, that things have gone by, you know. I mean, this is why the play is astonishing, the ecological things in the play, which are harped on, you know, before ecology was even fashionable.
Well, there are all sorts of things. This is also about America in transition, and people are resisting, all of these people to varying degrees are resisting, and did remind me of much of the same sort of thing that we hear today in different contexts. In fact, since there's also a political campaign involved, you almost wonder how much of the talk that we hear in the play is going on right now in somebody's living room as they're planning out a mayoral campaign.
Well, I mean, I think so exactly. I made the mistake, actually, in the very beginning of the play, is quantifying the play as the original Tea Party meeting, where four middle-aged men, kind of lower middle class, white, were disenfranchised. Look back on their life and realize it hadn't been realized, and started blaming everybody else for what they had not accomplished. I think the play is much more complicated than that, but it does deal with aspects of that, and for that I find it certainly an unbelievably interesting way to get into this story.
Well, we also get into strip mining and a whole bunch of other things.
Absolutely.
My guests are Kiefer Sutherland and Brian Cox, two of the stars of the revival of that championship season, now at the Bernard B. Jacobs Theater on West 45th Street. And Kiefer, you, Jason Patrick, also Chris Noth and Jim Gaffigan play four of the starting players on the championship team. The fifth member, Martin, isn't there. He was probably the best player, according to the dialogue. But is he the only one who got away from the town and the coach?
Well, what was very funny is you said that Jason Miller had written the play and that Tom was the character that he played. Jason Miller actually was known for saying that the character that he had written for himself was Martin. which I always thought was very, very
the offstage character.
Yes, yeah,
absolutely.
You know, it's very funny when I read the story, and this is just me personally. I thought Martin was full of crap.
Yeah,
and I didn't buy it. I thought I didn't. Given the structure of the lines and the dialogue and everything that could possibly inform me about Martin, I did not agree with Martin's take on this.
At one point, one of the characters says Martin was not a nice guy.
Yeah, and my character says Martin didn't have a brain in his head. But my point is that the coach has a line which is really clear, which is you have to have hate to win. And I don't necessarily believe that, but I believe that there is some level of competition that breeds this ideal, and I buy that. And so it was very interesting for me to play that aspect in the character where I go against my own kind of belief, because I actually would have supported the coach in this context.
It's very interesting about identification, you know, why I think it's a brilliant play, and why, you know, when people say the play is dated, I just think it's a nonsense. It really is a nonsense, because they're actually not looking at what the play is about.
Well, isn't Shakespeare dated on one level?
Exactly.
On the other level, the universe?
Exactly, and that's what I say about the play. It rings the universal bell. And one of the things about Martin, which is really interesting, is the fact that he's a mystery figure, that he is actually open to interpretation, like any other character in the play. Yeah, on the one level, he's, you know, very bright, very sensitive. And on the other hand, he's very selfish and obviously over-identified. And and it's very easy. What's good about the play is the coach says, I told him to beat him. I didn't tell him to break his legs. I told him you have to have hate to win. But that's like a motivating force. It's not the end result. And it's kind of understanding how you use these things, like imagination and not identifying. And this is a boy who's quite sensitive and did over-identify and therefore has kind of marginalized himself as a result.
Kiefer, you play James Daly, a junior high school principal who has dreams of bigger things. He's kind of nebbishy, and at 38, he's already lost his teeth. Seems like the opposite of Jack Bauer, your character from 24, more tortured than torturer. Was that your goal, to get as far away from Jack Bauer as possible?
In all fairness, Jason sent me the play and asked me to read it, and said...
With that part in mind?
No. I read it with no part in mind. In fact, I was drawn to Tom, as I think most actors are, because it's such a beautiful part. And I phoned Jason back, and I said, who's playing Tom? And he said, I am. And I said, well, then what do you want me to do? And he said, James. And I had already said, I'm in. I love the play so much that clearly I knew I wasn't being asked to play the coach. Mm-hmm. And any of the other four parts would have been fantastic. So it was not a conscious decision.
Well, some of the casting seems a little more obvious, like Chris Noth playing a womanizer.
Well, that was Jason being clever.
But it works quite well. After all, we already kind of think of him as big from Sex and the City. Currently, he's playing the philandering husband on The Good Wife, and he just seems like a natural for the role of Phil, who's a wealthy businessman and a womanizer.
That's right.
But he does it brilliantly.
Well, he does it with great delicacy, you know. I mean, again, you know, one of the things that people don't realize is it's a piece of acting. And it's a superb piece of acting, as all the guys are.
Well, this is an ensemble production.
It really is a quintet. It's a quintet.
Everybody gets a star turn.
Everybody
but there's
does.
No star, really.
No, everybody does. Everybody has their moment.
Well, and that's not fair. We follow the coach.
Wow, well, but it's true.
The coach is
our
star.
He has a few more.
He's
our
star.
More lines than
he's
any
our
other.
Star.
Yeah, but I mean, but everybody does get their moment, because it's actually also written by an actor, an actor who understands the problems of being on stage and how you fulfill yourself. You know, it's very interesting, the difference between working for a guy who is an actor writer and somebody who isn't an actor writer, like Tom Stoppard. Tom, I love Tom Stoppard. I think he's one of the greatest writers that we have. But he's not interested in that dilemma. He's interested in his idea, and he feeds his idea, and more power to his elbow. Jason Miller is interested in something else. And it's about why the actor is on stage and how that moment is filled and how he spends that whole night or she spends that whole night. It's tragic that he didn't write anything else. It really is tragic.
My guests are Brian Cox and Kiefer Sutherland, who along with Chris Noth, Jim Gaffigan, and Jason Patrick are the cast of that championship season now being revived at the Bernard B. Jacobs Theater on West 45th Street. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Brian Cox and Kiefer Sutherland, two of the five stars, and everyone is a star in this play of that championship season, being revived now at the Bernard B. Jacobs Theater on a limited run. How limited is the run?
Right now we're going to May 29th, and I think we have a little room to move. We've been actually asked if we can extend a little bit. And we're trying to work that out.
But you don't have to go back to 24 after nine seasons?
No,
Is this a scene as a respite?
24 is done.
A listener wrote in, Hi, I'm a big Kiefer Sutherland fan and 24 fan. There's been plenty of rumors about a 24 movie lately. For 24 fans, can you please ask Kiefer Sutherland tomorrow? He wrote it yesterday. On your radio show, what the status of the 24 movie is. Thanks very much.
We will start shooting that in January, and it will come out in the summer of 2012.
And it will last for 24 hours?
It will
or
be
just a, feel like it
will
lasts.
Be a two. No, I hope not. It will be a two-hour representation of a 24-hour film, which will actually be is a huge gift for us, actually, to be able to make the movie because we will not be restricted to the time constraints of what the series was. It will not be in real time.
Getting back to Jason Patrick being the son of Jason Miller, or being Jason Patrick Miller, how much of a struggle is it for a young actor to disassociate himself from a famous parent?
Well, for me, I was very fortunate. I worked in the early 80s. My father, for whatever reason, had decided to take a break in his career. And he had three younger sons that he spent a lot of time with and was taking care of. And so I actually had a very clean window for which to go to work and everything else. And so it was not a real issue for me. Jason's situation with this play, I think, is very different because the playwright is not with us. Mm-hmm. He is the only conduit that we have to this information.
Except on stage. He's still with us on stage.
Yes. And he is. He's the playwright is actually in an urn on stage.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Jason Miller's on in the back of the stage. He's
Jason
in an urn.
Brought his ashes,
his
on,
ashes
stage,
on stage,
and they're in the bookcase in the back. And we salute that before we go on.
Absolutely.
Every day. And but in all fairness, I think it's quite complicated for Jason just because this is such a personal project. And I think he's handled himself beautifully.
It's also physically demanding. He has the most physically demanding scene. He falls down a flight of stairs every night. Does that hurt as much as it looks like it does, or is there a trick to doing it safely? Because you wanted that part. You must have known that you'd have to fall down every night.
Well, I would have done
and
it.
And matinees.
I would have done it very differently, and I think I would have done it much more cowardly. he goes face first, and I would have gone back first. And but last night, for instance, in the performance, I watched Jason, and he rolled over, and he's supposed to be unconscious, and he actually went, ow. he had hurt his hip, and he was basically, and he was showing me where not to pick him up from because he has bruises like you wouldn't believe all over his body.
It's a tough call. I mean, it really is a tough call. I don't know what it's a kind of very sadistic act on behalf of the playwright to make an actor fall down, especially given the fact that we're going to fall down the stairs every night.
Well, and as you say, he was also an actor and nominated for an Oscar for playing the priest in The Exorcist.
That's right.
The same year that he won the Pulitzer and the Tony.
That's right. I mean, I think one doesn't want to speak for Jason because Jason can speak very well for himself. But the interesting thing has been the fact that his father only wrote this one play. And clearly it's a great play. And clearly there's a lot to be said. And, you know, John Simon said that he captures in one play the whole of the other Art Miller's oeuvre, you know, and Arthur. And it's really interesting because you realize that, in a way, the prophetic nature of this play was actually fulfilled because Jason Miller, he ended up going back to Scranton. He never did anything else.
He died young at
62. He died of alcohol, basically.
So that's what happened? Alcoholism of the character was
That's right.
And his problem.
It
became his play. And Jason has only that one, this is part of his life, you know. And as much as he's tried to disentangle it, you know, you can't. It's your dad. You know, it's what it's about. And we all carry that with us. You know, we all carry the graces and the sins of the father. You know,
playing an alcoholic character your father was an alcoholic.
It's a double whammy, you know, and the Irish melancholy and all the things that are invoked in this play. And I think that Jason, I think there's a lot of purging that's gone on, and I think a lot of stuff is being exercised. I don't know Jason all that well, but I don't think Jason's ever been happier, has he? And he is doing this.
He's in his form.
Yeah, he really is. It's wonderful to see.
Yeah.
Well, we have Brian Cox and Kiefer Sutherland here, two of the stars of the revival of Jason Miller's play, That Championship Season, starring also Jason Patrick, the son of the playwright. And we should also mention Jim Gaffigan, who
delightful.
Is quite brilliant in his role as a
And he's never done a play before. This is his first play.
This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. He's never done a play before?
No.
Because he looks like an old pro.
No, he's amazing. He's amazing. His rigor is phenomenal, from the word go. I mean, and he's had, he in many ways had the hardest job because he auditioned. He also doesn't have the same phone that we all have. You know, there's a story that we all have the same phone, which is true. We have it's a weird phone. It's a Samson phone.
It's an embarrassing
It's an embarrassing story. But Jim doesn't have that phone.
I mean, just coincidentally,
we
all
had
the same phone. We all had this.
The great technophobes of all time.
We all had this phone.
Oh, you don't know what my phone looks like. Your phone looks our very phone still fancy compared
our
to my phone.
Our phone still flips up.
Yes. But, I mean, Jim had an iPhone, and he auditioned. And it's
and he's never been a part of the group since.
Yeah, obviously he's not a team player.
No, he's very much a team player. He's very much a team player, and he's and kind of rigorous. I mean, he said, "What do you think? How's it going?" I mean, he's constantly, you know, because it's a new experience for him, and he loves it. You know,
he actually kind of shaped us up.
Yeah, he did.
From the very first read through, I'll never forget. In the very first read through, the whole first act, he didn't look at the script. And it really unsettled me.
And well, he'd done television. Maybe he was, he's done a fair amount of television, hasn't he?
Yeah, but I think that what Kiefer just said.
He learned it.
But he's a stand-up comic mostly.
He's a stand-up comic. And but he finds this harder. I mean, he says in stand-up comedy, he said it's a doddle compared to what he does here.
He plays the town's mayor, another guy who seems successful at first sight until we get to know him better. I don't want to go reveal too much about the plot, but he has to go through some, for a person who's a stand-up comic, go through some incredible acting changes.
And beautiful. I mean, there are moments where he breaks down that break my heart. And he's done things, and he's and you have to understand, I mean, I've watched this from the beginning of rehearsal through production and, to this point. And the work that he has done is extraordinary. Yeah. I mean, I really cannot tell you another actor that I've been more impressed with in my life.
Yeah, the play was originally produced by Joseph Papp's Public Theater, and it was considered politically daring, wasn't it, 1972, during the Vietnam War?
Yeah. I think it is daring. I think
it's politically daring now.
Yeah,
but at the time, it came across as an indictment of the American dream.
I think it's an indictment of the American dream today too.
That just
well, you're
changed.
A Canadian and he's a
yeah,
Scot.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, so we better get Jason.
I have to defend my country.
Therefore, we know what we're talking about.
Well, no, and you're talking about two expatriates who are living in the United States, who are here because of this American dream.
Absolutely,
And I believe in it more than anything. But there are certain things that are woven in the fabric of American culture that I do have a problem with. Racism is one of them. And this play really articulates how racism is handed down from fathers to sons. And I think the more we can look at that, the quicker we will be to dealing with it and moving forward. And I think that's why Jason Miller wrote the play the way he did.
Well, in the play, the McCarthy era is still fresh in people's minds. The coach still has fond memories of Father Coughlin.
Yeah.
The mayor's opponent in the election is Jewish and had an uncle who was a communist, and they discuss whether it would be effective as a campaign strategy to use that against him. That all seems very far in the past, and yet we might see something similar just with different details today.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Absolutely. My son, who's English, as opposed to Scottish, because he went to an English public school. He was born in London. And he came to see the play the first night, and he couldn't believe it. He said, I'd never thought I'd see such a dangerous play on a Broadway stage. He said, because of the sheer what is being invoked the whole night.
The N-word gets used,
and the naked racism, you know. I mean, when my character says about certain people ruin a country, and nobody says it out loud, but many think it, and then he evokes a famous phrase of the Holocaust, people never forget, they know. And it's a kind of shocking thing. It's very, very shocking, and people are, you can feel people go, ooh, it's near the knuckle. And because I don't think these issues have been really resolved. Just by picking up the carpet and sweeping everything underneath, it doesn't mean it goes away.
Although there is one big difference in the play, the former team members are 38 years old, and they consider themselves middle-aged.
Yeah.
That's no longer the case.
No, that's absolutely true. But then they were.
So 50 is the new 38, I guess.
That's right. 60 is the new 40.
We'll see.
You do have to toss a basketball around on the stage. And I was thinking, well, if they threw that ball hard at me, would I always catch it? Are there nights when people don't catch it?
We have been so shocked that there's a window right behind Jason when we throw that basketball. And I still think it's a mystery that we haven't broken it yet. Jason has dropped it twice because there was moments in the previews where he was kind of messing around trying to figure out, should I have a glass in my hand? Should I have the bottle in my hand?
And catch
the
ball.
So he's trying
to
catch it one hand and pass it on, and it was a disaster. So we've had a couple accidents with it.
And you worked everything out in rehearsal, or is this the kind of play where most of it is quite clear? You just say the lines and it all works.
Oh no, 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 not at all. I mean, we have to give our director, who we haven't talked about, Gregory Mosher. I mean, Greg did a most amazing job. His rigor and his attention to the detail and attention to the whole thing of people listening to one another, this was the thing that he absolutely exercised and was, very strong on. He would come down heavy if people didn't listen. And, occasionally, when you're rehearsing and you're trying to work it all out, sometimes you don't listen. You forget about it because you're trying to work out your point of view or what have you. And he was absolutely fierce about that. And so the modulation of the production is really, everything is there. Once we have that framework, and that's what I think, that's the thing that sustains us, because we do have that framework. Within that, there's a chance to boogie a bit. There's a chance to kind of move it around a bit.
Well,
I always wondered about what happens when you put together five very strong actors who come to the production from very different places, and you're asking them all to produce something that is consistent within itself.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a comedian here, you have somebody trained in British theater, You have somebody who who's done most – well, the you and Chris have done mostly movies.
And television.
And, yeah. and television. Jason has been all over the place. But, I mean, I don't know whether you all bring actor studio thinking to this or whether it's just everybody has to submerge.
It's about the play.
Yeah,
and at that point, it becomes about the play. And that was the one thing that joined all of us together. And
that's the great unifier.
And you feed the story. And whatever talents we have, we would use to bring that. And whatever we're lacking, in all fairness, Brian would help us.
Well, one of the reasons I was thinking of that is my next guest is Jack Garfine, who studied with Erwin Piscator and Lee Strasberg.
Right.
You can't think of two more disparate acting
right.
styles as what those men represented. And then he came up with his own kind of version that's his.
Right.
But in the end, a Piscator actor can do quite well with an actor studio actor if the play, you say?
The play is the thing. I mean,
Shakespeare said that. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And Shakespeare says it all, you know. And Shakespeare is invoked in this play. I mean, we actually quote Shakespeare in the play. And the play very much is the thing. You know, you can't do it without the material. And the fact that it's also written by an actor and it's written fiercely so that no moment is, you know, you're never on stage thinking, what am I doing? Where am I being? You know, every moment is filled, even when you're not speaking. Your position is very clear.
But this is also a very traditional play, and the set is very realistic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that must help define the acting style as well.
One of the things that Brian kind of talks about teaching a class and does, in fact, teach a class and has taught all over the world. His focus is on teaching people how to read.
Yeah.
And actors, if they learn how to read, will find everything.
Yeah, it's about inflection. I mean, I told them the story early on. I don't know if we have time for it, but it's a story about an actor who can't inflect, and the director spends the whole morning with him. And the line he's got is, you know, he's saying, "I'm going now." You know, is the line. And he goes, "I'm going now." And he said, and the director says, "No, it's just I'm going now. I'm going now. No, no, it's just I'm going now. I'm going now. No, no, it's I'm going now. I'm going now. No, no." and it gets desperate. The guy can't inflect. So he goes, the director sort of calls the rehearsal to an early stop. And at lunchtime, he goes for a swim. He always goes for a swim at lunchtime. And it's in the Oasis. It's in London. And he's on the diving board. And he's about to dive off the diving board. And as he's about it, he sees the actor is also there swim. And the actor looks up and points at the director and says, "You've got your watch on."
The actor who cannot inflect.
And that's about
reading. All those actors who obsess over why, sir, a carpenter.
That's right, exactly. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us, Brian Cox and Kiefer Sutherland, who star along with Chris Noth, Jim Gaffigan and Jason Patrick in the revival of that championship season, now at the Bernard B. Jacobs Theater. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Leonard.